Today we're talking about pumping iron, so I had to call up my old friend, the Terminator himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold, how happy are you to be doing this podcast right now? How satisfied do you feel?
It's as satisfying to me as coming is, you know, as having sex with a woman and coming.
Whoa, Arnold, okay, calm down, man. Jesus.
So can you believe how much I am in heaven?
Yeah, listen, it's heaven for me too, okay? I just want to keep it kind of PG if we can for the intro. But anyways, you're a big fan of the podcast, right? I mean, you listen when you're at the gym, you listen.
I'm like getting the feeling of coming in the gym.
Oh,
I'm getting the feeling of coming at home. I'm getting the feeling of coming backstage when I pump up, when I pose out in front of 5,000 people.
That's great.
I get the same feeling. So I'm coming day and night.
All right.
I mean, it's terrific, right?
Yeah, I know. It is terrific. I'm glad you're a listener and that the podcast makes you feel the way that it makes you feel. And thank you for coming on. And I hope everybody at home enjoys this episode. And I apologize for the crass nature of this intro.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight? Bad science.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and today we're talking about a classic Academy Award not nominated film called Pumping Iron.
You know that new category, Academy Award not nominated? Did you stutter on nominated or purposefully say not nominated?
No, I don't think it was nominated for anything. I just wanted to pump up the movie. Pun intended.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. It's Pumping Iron with Arnold Schwarzenegger from 1977. And let me introduce our guest, our outspoken guest number one. You know her from the critically acclaimed Netflix show Glow and the fan acclaimed episode of this podcast, Finding Nemo. Yeah. It's Jackie Tone.
Hello. Oh,
musician, comedian, writer, actress, Jackie Tone.
It's me. Hello, everybody.
How's it going, Jack?
It's really good. It's really good. I was just, when you said from the Finding Nemo episode, I remember in the beginning of that, I was like, I love his derpy fin.
Yes.
And she said, oh, he'd be dead within 5 seconds of being born because a shark would eat him because he can't swim. And I was like, and we're off to the races.
Yeah. That was a fantastic ep. You played some uke in that ep,
sure,
which was great.
Played uke in that ep.
And we learned some very disturbing truths about
the sea.
About the sea. Yeah, it seemed very cute and tear-worthy before that. And then it was
tear-worthy for other reasons. Yeah microplastics. Alrighty.
Hey, speaking about Pixar, we have another previous guest who is back. He is the director of the Center for Exercise Medicine and Sports Sciences at the School of Biological Science at UC Irvine and the science advisor from WALL-E, who you will probably recall from the WALL-E episode of this podcast. It's Dr. James Hicks.
Whoa! I didn't know that whole beginning part.
Yeah, it's all
true. When you said he worked on WALL-E, I'm interrupting.
Thanks.
That's all you had to say. Thanks. How's it going,
Glad
James?
To be back.
Yeah. Hey, listen, great
it's
to see you.
It's almost 1 year.
It's almost been a year. It's our anniversary almost.
Right.
Since then, you've been to Italy.
That's
you've
right.
gotten into avocado toast.
I have.
apparently, which is great.
I have, very much so.
Whole wheat avocado toast, we should specify. Because you're all about health.
I try to be.
You try to be.
He's a humble man. I don't mean to, like, you know, really sell you out, throw you under the bus, but he did just seconds ago before we started say his wife needs to remind him to drink more water.
That's
so
true.
Thank you for revealing that secret.
Mm-hmm. Well,
listen,
I, as like
perfect.
A not that healthy person, needed to feel a little bit better about myself.
Yeah, if you want, just put him down throughout the entire
Fantastic.
Show.
Fantastic. I've got
any chance
chips
get.
In my bag that I brought here because I forgot to eat.
I bet they're healthy chips.
No,
they're not.
I forgot to eat and then saw these in the car from a long time ago, and that was my breakfast. So
wow.
Drink more water, Jim.
Wow.
I'll try.
Keep shaming Jim.
Yeah. Wait, but also putting down yourself.
Only thing he does. Wrong.
You're eating chips from your car. Old chips from your car.
That's right.
Okay, so Pumping Iron. I had seen this film previously. Jackie, you had not. Is that correct?
I had not. And when you... I knew it was an Arnold movie, but I didn't realize it was a doc.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was just like some shitty old Arnold, like, running around. Mm. And I was like, I guess I'll watch this. I mean, that'll be fine.
Yeah. Some motivation, maybe, perhaps.
I mean... Nothing primes you for a weightlifting documentary like homoerotic softcore porn, guys. I couldn't. This was the gayest shit I have ever seen in my life. At one point in the movie, So these two dudes are taking a shower, and Arnold makes a muscle and has the other guy feel it a bunch.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that's cool. Like, all of that stuff is great.
Yeah.
But
some primal competition right there.
It's just gay.
Yeah, I'm trying to come from the other angle, but I hear what you're saying. It's kind of hard to avoid thinking about it in a homoerotic way while you're watching. And the music, too, is like very 70s porn music.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, they're not shy about
it. No, and I was watching with my best friend Colton, who's gay, and he just kept being like, I can't, but like, he couldn't. For lack of a better term, erupting. He could not believe that he had never, like, he couldn't believe it.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. James, had you seen this film prior?
I had seen it a long time ago, probably back in the 80s.
Okay, when you were just getting into bodybuilding.
when I was probably a graduate student.
Okay.
And had not seen it. So when you contacted me, I said, I'm going to have to watch that film. I had a hard time finding it.
Okay, sorry about that.
It was on iTunes.
Oh, okay.
I was able to get it off there. Watch it again.
We should have sent you a link, so somebody fucked that up, and sorry about that.
He owes us both $4.
Yep.
Because I had to rent it, too.
I will be Venmoing you promptly. but what'd you think of the movie?
I thought it was interesting. I mean, I'd forgotten completely about it, so I could not have told you what it was about before, other than it was about weightlifting or bodybuilding. But
right.
I thought it was interesting from the perspective of now what I know in terms of the physiology and exercise physiology, how much they kind of knew at the time, but also didn't know. I mean, what I was amazed in that film was that there was no discussion of nutrition.
At all.
So
no.
True. And by the way, I was hoping for just baseline foundational knowledge of sets, reps.
Right.
How many days a week?
Right.
Nothing.
No, it wasn't not, it was, talk about informational. I mean, it was the antithesis of informational in any way. It was like, it was like a commercial for Arnold's arms and that he comes a ton and that was it.
That's true.
Was the whole.
No matter what he's doing, he's coming, ladies and gentlemen.
I come when I pose. I come. My imitation of him, by the way, is spot on.
Pretty good. I thought he was in the room.
It's anyone's guess what country he's from. I come when I pose. I come when I am with a woman. I come when I pump. I come. And he just kept saying,
it's pretty great. I'm always coming.
Yeah, that was great. Oh, yeah. He's from Italy now for sure.
Yeah,
mine, you couldn't tell what country he's from, but with yours, he's from Italy.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone's Italian to me. You guys are Italian, right?
I love that about you.
Not Italian.
Oh, not Italian.
Not Italian.
Jew.
Okay. Oh, Jew. Okay, fantastic.
Like anybody had a question about that.
okay, so, yeah, you were...
No information about nutrition. And really,
right.
You're right, nothing about the sort of what they're doing to sort of sculpt their body. It was just, it really was about Arnold, actually.
Right?
And about how he tries to psych everybody out. And
yeah.
And made me kind of sad.
And how you see just how driven he was.
Right.
You know what's interesting? The word driven, because there's almost like something... A channel missing, or maybe it's one missing in my brain, but as a neurotic, it looks like when I watch someone like Arnold, there's like a channel missing in their brain that maybe even suggests they can't.
Right.
My whole life is like, you, what, you think you, and I have to like constantly overcome self-doubt and the whole thing anytime I do anything. And he's the polar opposite of just like, no, I am the best. No one is better. No one will ever. But there's like
something clicked for him clearly, like in his early 20s, because he said, they were asking him about like, what's your weakness? Or like, because everybody has like a weak spot they have to work on exercise wise. And he's like, I don't have, I had weak spots, but I worked on
them.
And so now I'm perfect and all my shit's perfect. I mean, he's like 28 years old in the doc, I have to say. And he just won like five in a row.
Yeah.
Mr. Olympia
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm, who knows what that feels like, where it's just, you are the king five times every year. So I'm sure he's on a huge high, but he really seemed like in the zone, cool, calm, collected. I know what I'm doing. Uber confident. No self-doubt, like, at all.
God, that must be so nice.
Not so self-doubt, but he used psychology on his opponents.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
He was trying to get every edge that he could get. And to me, relying on psychology knows that he knew that some of those guys may beat him. So he's going to pull everything he can out of the bag and try to psych them out a little bit beforehand.
Yes.
And I was thinking about that part of the movie where I was a little bit like, I wrote in my little notes, like, psychological warfare. Mm-hmm. Like, when the one guy took the other guy's shirt, it's like, but then you won because you made someone confused and sad, and not because you're the best. And then that, for right. me, I guess it wouldn't cheapen it when you go home with that title and you're on the cover of the magazines. But it feels like I don't want to get a job because I slashed a girl's tires on the way to the audition right. and she couldn't get there.
But
and then I only got it because she. Cause
but
I
you're
fucked
a morally her. Sound human.
So they're all these people, immorally.
I just think that you typically, for some reason in my head, if you're like the CEO of a huge company, or if you're a champion, a five-time champion, there's probably something in there that's a little bit rotten. That's where you're like, I'm going to do whatever the hell it takes to screw my opponents to get to the top. And that's why they're at the top.
They want
to
win.
Kind of what it felt like with Arnold.
Almost at any cost, they want to win.
Yeah. Right? Like, I've been told, like, Jordan was a huge dirtbag, apparently, and just, like, talked a bunch of crap and, no one could defeat him, Whoa. It got in their heads.
Well, that's why, in a lot of these athletic competitions, that's why supplement comes in. That's why, performance-enhancing drugs start to evolve, right? Because
yes.
they're trying to do everything they can to win. It's
right.
that kind of personality. They'll do whatever they can.
So let's talk about that for a second, because that's a huge... They didn't really talk about it in the film.
Yeah. Were steroids around in 77?
Steroids were around, and Schwarzenegger does later on admit to using steroids, but...
Yes.
But it says it wasn't really a big deal because, everybody was, it wasn't outlawed at the time, and it was just, people were trying it.
There's also that sense of, like, if everyone's doing it and that's equaling the, it's re-leveling the playing field of, like, mm-hmm. None of us should be doing it, but we're all doing it.
Yeah.
So now mm-hmm. whatever we become, that's the base level.
Right.
Us
right.
all being on steroids is the base level. So it,
yeah, it
if
was,
one guy's doing it, that's, like, mm-hmm. unfair and fucked up.
Yes. Well, that's how it became, like, what happened to it. That's how it evolved, I guess, because now they have, like, these masking agents where
right,
they have to
right.
try and hide that they're using steroids. And so when people get caught, it's, like, a much bigger deal. But at that point, it was legal. And I have a quote here. He said, "Steroids were helpful to me in maintaining muscle size while on a strict diet in preparation for a contest. I did not use them for muscle growth, but rather for muscle maintenance when cutting up." He called the drugs tissue building.
Yeah, so...
Then he came.
And then he said, "Hold on for me one second."
Yeah, so that quote has there's a variety of parts of that quote that don't seem to make sense.
Okay, let's break it down.
So he's using testosterone or steroids, probably testosterone, mm-hmm. to not to increase muscle mass. He says for maintenance, but then what do you say at the end? It builds tissue.
Right.
So if you're building tissue, aren't you building muscle mass probably then?
You would know.
Right?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I know. So,
yeah, I'm not asking you shit.
It's rhetorical. So the, so he was, the size that those guys achieve, I'm not convinced can be achieved by the average individual without supplementing with steroids, anabolic steroids.
Whoa.
Right. So he wasn't just using for, I don't believe he was using it for just maintenance. He was using it to increase muscle mass. And once he's in, he continued to probably take it to keep that muscle, that size. Uh-huh. But it clearly helped him get that big.
So can you define for me the differences here? Like, because I think you just mentioned that he was using testosterone. Like,
I would assume he's, or some sort, yeah.
Says,
or growth hormones, some sort of one of the anabolic steroids.
Okay, so that the growth hormone, testosterone, these are types of anabolic steroids.
Yeah, anabolic just meaning they build tissue, they build muscle, they build protein, they build synthesized proteins.
They synthesize proteins.
Yeah.
Okay, are there different kinds or are we kind of hitting all the corners here?
No, there's a variety of anabolic steroids that you can use or modifications of testosterone and growth hormone that will then... also be powerful agents for building muscle mass.
Okay, and what's
so funny because I think Arnold is sort of resting on us not all being scientists and
right.
professionals when right. it comes to building your body.
Yeah.
So he's like, "No, just for tissue." And we're all like, "Oh my God, for tissue? Got it."
Got it.
And then
that's
you had someone
deal.
Being like, "No, that's, no, you, okay, lying, wrong."
Same deal.
Yeah,
same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And what's the email address for the guy that can get me these steroids? Because I want to get like super jacked up and not try that hard.
Yeah.
Because they look like they're in a ton of pain when they're working out.
Oh, the faces they make while they're exercising actually are making me sick. And I'm not being cute.
Right.
When like I had just eaten. And then when they would like really make, I was like, oh, I'm going to, like, I just kept feeling like I'm going to vomit.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
they look so, even to do that. there's like a there's different things going on in the brain of that person. Mm-hmm. And then I guess that is why they say like separates the men from the boys or the champions yeah. from the regular people.
But there is an underlying physiological reason that people make those sort of faces of exertion when they're lifting weights. Mm-hmm. Because if you think of skeletal muscle is not an all or none muscle. If I go to contract my bicep, I can control just how much force I'm generating, right? So when I put a weight on there, there's a lightweight, I can contract. If I get a heavier weight, I got to generate a little bit more force. A really heavy weight, I got to generate. What am I doing? Your skeletal muscles are innervated by what they call motor units, mm-hmm. right? So a number of muscle fibers will be innervated by one motor unit. A large muscle might have 10,000 motor units. Oh, or wow. I mean, 1,000 motor units. A very fine control muscle might have 10,000 motor units. Okay. So you're controlling the amount of force generated by the muscle by activating those motor units. Oh. So when you make that grimacing face, you know, you're in doing that, in a sense, you're activating more and more motor units. Wow. And that helps you generate more force.
I was going to say, it's sending energy
right.
there.
Great. Wow. So you're activating more of those motor units. And so they get very good at controlling their motor units. Ooh. And generating the kind of forces that they need.
So it's not any sort of dramatics. It's
no,
actually
physical. It was dramatics. I felt like they had to.
Yeah, yeah.
Like while watching same. It, I wasn't like, whoa, this is a great show you're putting on.
Right.
But it did not make my sushi yeah. come up.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
It looks really hard. It just looks like they're at the point of, you know, they could get injured
their skin's going to burst or they're going to take a shit. Yeah. Like it's just right. something about it was just like, this is too, it was like, and it happened 1,000 times in the movie.
Yeah.
And at a certain point it was like almost horrific where I was like starting to turn away. Yeah. I was like,
there were too many shots of shit on the floor.
I can't see one more man do that. It just felt like so aggressive at a certain point.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, but I mean, I just think that, you know, that's, we all sort of do that when we're going to really exert ourselves. And that, in this case, they're exerting themselves to lift weights. You know, when you go out, start working out, you go to the gym for the first, if you haven't worked out with weights for a while, you go and you work out. And after about 3 weeks or so, you're going, God, I'm getting pretty strong here. I can lift a bit more. But you haven't actually built any more muscle mass yet.
Oh.
What you've done is you're learning to activate more of those motor units.
Oh.
And so you get this training of motor units early on in weightlifting. And then later on, within months, you know, after a few months, you start building more and more muscle mass.
That's fascinating.
Okay, yeah. Very interesting.
So these motor units are important. They're an important part of controlling force, and you have to train them as well. So
yeah, so that's really what you want, guys, is a ton of motor units. And
or you want to be able to control them and activate them and utilize them.
Should we brand a new like type of protein powder or
something?
That's
what I was thinking. I was thinking like motor unit drink.
Yeah, exactly. Because nobody talks about that. So that's a whole market right
there. Yeah, this whole area is filled with so much BS that in fact, that's a pretty good idea.
That's a
good idea, the motor unit drink. Drink this and within, you know, you can cut down that whole training of the motor units by a month.
Oh,
my God. We're getting
Have
rich.
You not worked out in a while? Yeah. Do you need to skip that first month of bullshit?
motor drink. Units. Yeah, exactly.
Motor unit drink. Okay, so actually, I think we have a clip here about the pain that they go through. If you want to play that for us, Lucas, our engineer.
The body is not used to maybe the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th rep with a certain weight. So that makes the body grow then, going through this pain barrier, experiencing pain in your muscles and aching and just then go on and go on and then go on. And this last 2 or 3 or 4 repetitions, that's what makes actually the muscle then grow. And that divides then one from a champion and one from not being a champion. If you can go through this pain barrier, you make it to be a champion. If you can't go through, forget it. And that's what most people lack, is on this having the guts to go in and just say, I go through and I don't care what happens. You know, it aches. And if I fall down, I have no fear of fainting in a gym because I know it could happen. I threw up many times while I was working out, but it doesn't matter because it's all worth it.
So there you have it.
Yeah.
From the horse's mouth.
Motor unit.
Mixture of all sorts of things in there.
Oh, see, okay. It's funny. I took it at like face value. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Arnold the Prophet.
Yeah.
Like, bro.
Well, to me, the headline there is just, you know, pushing without fear.
Yeah. He was talking, he combined both some psychology and didn't talk much and sort of implied some of the physiology that induces hypertrophy, the growth of muscle.
Okay. Hypertrophy?
Muscle mass, hypertrophy. So when muscles get bigger, they are, it's called hypertrophy, and you're not making more muscle cells. You're taking the muscle cells that are already there and packing them with more contractile protein.
Oh,
right.
Baby.
So they call muscle, skeletal muscle, they call it post-mitotic tissue, right? You don't grow new muscle cells, but you take the existing ones and stuff them full of more contractile protein.
Wow.
So we call that hypertrophy. And when you don't work out for long periods of time, the muscles get smaller. That's called atrophy.
There we go. I knew that hypertrophy. I knew that.
It was coming.
And as you age, you lose muscle mass, and they call that sarcopenia.
Well, I knew sarcopenia. I almost just said sarcopenia.
I had a sarcopenia actually when I was born.
Oh, funny.
It was about a week after.
It's weird. Yes. I just ate a sarcopenia.
So he was combining there some psychology, but the underlying, you know, he was close to what some of the factors are that drive hypertrophy. And one of those is the metabolic stress that you put on the muscle.
Okay.
Part of that, and that's going to be involved with the repetitions that you do. Part of it's the load, so the amount of weight that you're lifting.
Yeah.
And those send signals to the muscle cells, these special muscle cells called satellite cells, that then induce a whole variety of biochemical pathways that start the production of actin and myosin, which are the contractile proteins that are being stuffed inside the muscle cells. And then when they actin and myosin interact with each other, that causes the muscle to shorten. So these stimuli, when you're weightlifting, you are stimulating the satellite cells, and you're also stimulating a variety of other pathways that induce then the nucleus, that part of the cell that has the DNA in it, that has the blueprint for producing those actin and myosin that will then be put into the myofibrils or the muscle cells and cause it to get bigger. And as the muscle gets bigger, this cross-sectional area goes up and you can generate more force.
What goes up?
The cross-sectional areas. And then you can just generate more force.
Wow.
Crazy.
So yeah. So he, as I said, he was combining both a little bit of psychology there, but the underlying physiology is from the pain. But pain's associated with it.
Because I was going to say, in your opinion, does he know what he's talking about?
No.
Ah, okay. Because that's
but it was also mid-70s.
What I mean. I'm not saying he's not bright or anything. He is. Obviously.
He's empirical though, right? He's empirical because he's doing it and he's seeing the results, and so he understands that if I do this and I lift to failure, that's a common thing, lifting to failure.
Right.
I generate pain if I can tolerate that.
Yeah.
I work harder. I induce more, increased muscle mass.
Yeah.
So he sees the observation, but he's not a physiologist. So he's not
going to understand. Was the science even there at that time?
Yeah, the science was there, but it's much more sophisticated now. I think they've learned a lot more now about the underlying sort of molecular mechanisms that drive hypertrophy. But
do you think that are there changes nowadays? Like, would people? Or do people, I guess, work out differently or body build differently? Are there things that, mistakes that they were making in the 70s?
I think that they had this sort of basic right plan. That is, they talk about the volume of the workout. That is, the load, how much you're lifting, how many reps you're doing, and sort of then what's the rest period you have in between sets. And all this goes into the volume of the workout. And they know that there's an optimal volume to induce the optimal amount of muscle growth. Hmm. They knew that, I think empirically, that during that film, you get a sense, they know that, how hard to lift and the rest they're taking in between sets. But I think what's happened is there's been a huge advances in nutrition in our understanding of what kinds of the ratios of carbohydrates and fats and proteins you should be taking post-exercise.
Yeah, it's not just calories.
It's not just calories. Mm-hmm. And that combination, I think that's where a lot of the advances have gone on. And there has been advances in the underlying science of muscle, understanding muscle growth. Mm-hmm. And so people take advantage of that. But to me, it's a combination of both that plus all the nutrition we know now in much more detail, I think.
And probably huge advances in steroids and being able to mask them or just steroids. I didn't know about the masking thing till you said it, but probably been major advances in obviously with tech and everything.
Yeah.
That movie Icarus, did you see that?
I did not. I heard that was good.
Yeah, that's a
cool ass movie. My old buddy made that. Yeah.
Should have done that.
this dude
we can do that sometime.
All right, this dude started out to make a movie. He was going to take human growth hormone. He was going to take HGH. So basically, he tried out as like an amateur cyclist for the Tour de France. And like the year before, as an amateur, he came in like 14th. He was like,
whoa.
Okay, cool. I'm going to do a documentary. Supersize me. Yeah. I'm going to take HGH and see what I'd get next year. So he set out to make this whole doc. And then he took all this HGH and the next year came in like 28th or 38th.
Whoa.
He did much worse.
He crashed his bike.
And he crashed his bike. It was his whole thing. Okay. Anyway, he was sort of like out of what this doc was even going to be about. But when he was getting the HGH, he got it from this sort of famous Russian doctor, scientist.
Dealer.
Well, yeah. And this guy turned out he cracked open the Russian Olympic doping scandal.
Whoa.
And he had to go into... It's a fascinating movie. It's a doc.
Icarus.
Anyway, Icarus, yeah.
That sounds great. Gotta check that
just
out.
Reminded me because of all this HGH
talk. Since we're on a tangent, I wanted to remind you guys about this video, if you didn't see it, of Arnold Schwarzenegger getting kicked in the back. Do you know about this?
Oh my God, it was so weird.
Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted to, in case you guys haven't seen it at home, look it up. This guy tries to, I don't know, be some sort of smartass and like do a flying kick to Schwarzenegger, but he like hits a wall, basically just hits him, falls to the ground, and then a bodyguard takes him out of there.
I heard that Schwarzenegger said afterwards, I thought somebody was just pushing me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he probably felt, but that was a great, I mean, that's a very perfect response.
Yes.
I mean, but you can tell like with, you know, maybe you think that's accidental, but after seeing Pumping Iron, you're like, oh, you know how to manipulate other people's brains. Mm-hmm. And you wanted that guy to feel like he was just a gnat to you.
So yeah.
You're like, oh, I didn't even notice until I saw the video. I didn't even notice that even happened.
I thought it was a breeze.
Yeah,
a nice little breeze in this.
And while we're on tangents, every shot of Pumping Iron, all I could think about was how bad the room smelled.
Oh, man, it's got to.
Every room, even the room like of just... where everybody was posing and in front of the judges. It was like, that just doesn't smell good.
I mean, I don't know if you can talk to this or not, but that's for sure. I mean, that's what sweat smells terrible. I think just in general for like everybody.
I feel like also in the 70s, you're like, people aren't doing the necessary.
I don't know. I don't know how different it is. I feel like there's not much you can do.
I think the gym has a particular odor to it.
Yeah.
Just every room. I was like, that one's extra bad.
Is there something we can do? Can you eat something that makes you sweat cologne? How does that work?
You know, we secrete all sorts of fluids from our body. And
ain't that the
they
truth?
Just have, you know, they start to oxidize and change and they just have smells. So,
but I noticed that depending on what I eat, my BO is worse.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Like, if I eat, like, Doritos and I'm, like, on a tear where I'm just eating, like, chemicals and all this gross, because I don't eat that way. I mean, I'm not cuckoo healthy, but I try.
Yeah.
But when I'm just like, you know what? I'm off the fucking rails. I don't care. It's, like, ice cream and Doritos and Coca-Cola and whatever else. I notice my BO. Yeah, in a cereal bowl. And Lucky Charms on top, dry. Then I realize my BO is different.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I have a different smell.
Yeah.
Well, you know, along those lines, I mean, this is a little off topic, but Benjamin Franklin, one of our founding fathers, was
my actual father.
People don't know that.
Was obsessed with trying to find a way to change the smell of flatulence.
Wow.
He was absolutely obsessed. He actually wrote, when he was an ambassador in France, wrote a proposal to the French Academy of Sciences to study how you might be able to change the smell of farts.
To whom it may concern, my ass reeks.
Yeah. And so this idea of what you could ingest that could then change a body odor has been...
And were there any Franklin findings?
No.
Okay, great.
Not I'm aware of.
But, just the light bulb, just kidding.
He wrote that if your flatulence smelled like roses, that people would then be not inhibited to fart in public and therefore be healthier for doing this.
Oh, that's true, because it messes up your stomach.
Yeah. So that's a side thing. I know that we were talking about body odors and smells, so I thought
I like that. It's crazy that we're here 2019 and everybody's farts stink. Why is that? You know, why can't we just, it should just be known, like, you eat one papaya, you're good.
That's
for 48 hours.
Just blame it on the microbiome.
On the microbiome?
Yeah, the microbiome.
First, I'll find out what the microbiome is, and then I will blame things on it.
Yeah, let me go to the Google office headquarters, and then I'll be right back.
Just everything now is just the microbiome. Just say the microbiome.
What is the microbiome?
The microbiome is all the organisms that live in your GI tract. Millions and millions of different kinds of organisms that live in your GI tract. Bacteria, fungi, little, you know, parasites, all these things are living in there. There's a whole world inside your GI tract, which is essentially outside your body, by the way. Your GI tract is inside your body, but it's actually outside your body.
What do you mean? Yeah, well, how does that work?
This is outside my body right here, right?
He's pointing to his teeth. Okay.
Right. So that's just a tube that from the outside is folds in during development. So the inside of that tube is really from the outside.
Whoa.
So
but most of it is inside. Yeah, there are parts that stick out. Right. I'm just trying to get it clear.
So you have
layman's terms.
So you have this whole world of microbes that live in there, and they call it the microbiota, and they then say the microbiome because they try to look at the underlying genetic information that's in that microbiota. So all those are small microorganisms that live there, and they have a big effect on our physiology.
Wow. Microbiome.
The microbiome.
So next time.
Microbiota are all the organisms. The microbiome is the genetic information.
Yeah. So next time you're in an elevator and everybody's looking at you because you took
just say it's my microbiome.
It's my microbiome. Mm-hmm. Mind your own.
Yeah.
Mind your own microbiome and get out of my face. And they'll think, well, this guy's a doctor.
Yeah.
But that's one of the hottest areas right now in biology.
Why is it one of the hottest areas right now?
Because it turns out that those organisms influence our function, our overall physiology.
Is that when people talk about like how important gut health is?
Exactly right. Exactly right. It's
kombucha,
all about gut health,
et cetera.
And so.
But what else does it influence? Whoops, off the mic. What else does it influence?
For example, they've shown a relationship between changes in your the microbiota and the incidence of hypertension, blood pressure.
Oh.
They've shown there's evidence out there that microbiome might be associated with Alzheimer's.
I was just going to say anything to do with mental health.
Yes.
Yeah, so I have
it's a huge
sadness stuff. And I'm like, do I need to eat differently to not stare at that wall so damn often?
There was an early experiment done where they had these mice, or I think they were mice. They had these mice that were bred to be really fat, you know, overweight. And then they had a similar species just regular weight. And they just exchanged the microbiota between the two. They took out the microbiota from the fat mouse, put it in the skinny mouse, and the skinny mouse became fat, and the fat mouse became skinny as they switched them, right? So they knew then that right away that the makeup of those organisms in your GI tract was influencing somehow the way that you acquired energy and how much of the food that you were eating was being transported into your system.
You've now switched the microbiota of the fat and the skinny, but then you feed the skinny ones a ton. Will they not get fat because of their microbiota?
Yeah.
I didn't do those experiments. So I don't really,
but I'm like, what is that? Just keep you skinny forever? Get me that microbiota.
Yeah. Switch it up.
Give me that mouse microbiota.
This really is a big area now.
Wow.
So do you, probiotics?
I didn't study it myself, but I know that.
But do you take probiotics or drink kombucha gut health? That's what we're talking about, right?
How much of that shit is like, exactly. Because you were saying earlier, how much bullshit is in this thing?
That's why I'm asking. We got listeners spending millions of dollars hour on kombucha.
Right. I'm not an expert in that area, so I'll reframe. I have opinions about it, but I'm not an expert.
All I care about is your opinions.
Yeah, well, I don't do that.
Good song.
I do take probiotics and kombucha, spend $1 million an hour. I'm a professional.
Can I just ask you personally, do you, it sounds like, I'm going to venture a guess here, that you don't drink kombucha and that you don't have, I don't know what, kimchi on a regular basis.
I don't. I actually don't like kimchi. I shouldn't say that. My daughter-in-law is half Korean, but I...
Sorry.
I don't like kimchi.
Okay.
I'm Jewish and don't like gefilte fish. I'll be happy to say it.
Yeah, why not? Matzah's dry.
Yeah, very.
I'm going out on a limb.
But no, I absolutely believe that the microbiota has a big influence on your overall health and your physiology.
Okay.
But I don't know if we really understand yet how we can alter that in a way that we can optimize that.
We're not there yet.
I don't think we're there yet in terms of optimizing our microbiota.
Okay, time for a quick break, and we shall be right back.
Hey, everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars, and there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
Okay, let's hop back to being jacked as all hell. All right. Because that's all that everybody wants, right?
Oh, God. The other thing being jacked as all hell, like, it. I guess maybe people think it does. It looks terrible.
It's a lot. I mean, I think that there is.
I guess there's like a very small percentage of women that are like, yo.
What?
That looks.
Oh, it looks great. So, well, I don't even know if it's about like the sexuality or seduction part of it. Because they touched on it in the doc because they were saying like, my dad was bigger than me and I wanted to be bigger than my dad. And I think that's a big part of it. Or just maybe from like an aggression standpoint. Mm-hmm. Like there's some sort of like weird, maybe you can touch on it like. Old school mentality of like, I want to be able to take, I don't want to be bullied. A few of these guys talked about being bullied at school and they were like, I'll show them while they're at the prom, I'm running track. And
Arnold said he was impressed by dictators.
Yeah. That's a quote. Which is odd that he became a politician and nobody thought about that. Yeah.
I thought about that during the film and talked about it. My wife watched it with me. We talked about it afterwards and I don't know what motivates them actually, because it is something. I think you're right. I think my impression is that most women don't find that attractive at all. I mean, if I talk, you know, I said my wife watched it with me. She was just the whole time like, oh my God, this is just like, really?
That's how I was actually surprised at how, for lack of a better term, I was kind of grossed out the whole time. I was like, this is like, it wasn't, look, if that's what you want to do and you're not hurting anybody else and you're making this choice to partake in this sport, like, God bless. But I was surprised by how much I was like, oh, this is it. But I will say on the flip side of that, speaking of to these giant men, a bunch of the Glow Girls, we go to like WWE events sometimes because there's like sort of vague wrestling crossovers.
Yeah.
And, watching it on TV, I'm like, okay, these like giant men, this is kind of, you know, their athleticism is unmatched and what they're doing is incredible. I'm not one of those people that's like, wrestling's fake, whatever, because what they're doing is incredible.
Yeah.
That said, I would watch it and be like, these meatheads, like, this isn't attractive. Mm. I met one of the gentlemen from the ring in person.
Uh-oh, here we go.
And my body was doing a thing that I did not say it could do. And I am not even fucking kidding. I was like fanning myself. My cheeks got hot. My hands were a little clammy. I was like,
wow.
Oh, this guy like can kill a lion. Like it was.
I like that he can kill a lion.
It was just crazy. And honestly, I have since told, and I'll tell you the guy I'm talking about after specifically, saying it on the air.
Great.
But
I'll record
he's
it.
He's one of the like less attractive, like, He is just like sort of funny looking. And it just was like, I met him and it was like, oh my God, this is a little too much. I could not imagine this guy fucking me.
Wow.
There was no universe. It was like, oh my God. Like it was, my guts were coming out.
Yeah.
But then watching Pumping Iron, I was nauseated. But maybe if I met them in person.
That's gotta be part of the motivation for them to do it. There's something just like evolutionary about our want to be huge and strong and badass.
Right.
I want to be that strong, but at the same time, especially with when they do the poses, when they go through the routine, that's really where it becomes like, man, this looks crazy. Like he looks like a beast.
And it's not even a human
being. We are animals and it is evident now.
Skin is like ripping.
Yeah, I mean, we are primates, right?
Yeah.
And there's sexual dimorphism in primates. Males are bigger and you might be right. I mean, there might be part of that going on in there.
Yeah.
I think they also get into this idea though. I mean, they said it in the movie, is the sort of sculpting the body.
Right.
They're obsessed with how they can sculpt their body and make it look a particular way.
Yeah.
Exact. On the same. Yeah.
And
symmetrical.
There's this part where Schwarzenegger says that, you know, if you're an artist and you're making a statue, you can just slap some, you know, you want deltoids, just put some clay up there and you can do it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But there it takes years to make that, and you have to make it symmetrical. And that's a really hard thing to do.
Right.
In the weight room is make a symmetrical distribution of these muscles, right?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is immense.
The challenge is huge. I think they get into that whole challenge of being
for sure. And I respect the crap out of that.
Too.
I think
it's
that's
impressive.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing.
Definitely, while watching, I was like, "This is impressive."
Yeah. And I think there's also like the I don't want to say fear of the unknown, but like distaste. Like when something's different, there's kind of this automatic function in my brain that's like, "Oh, I don't know if I like this because I'm not used to seeing it." Mm-hmm. You know, I see all my friends hanging out all the time. We're all normal looking people. I would say, you know, fairly weak individuals.
And gross garbage bags.
Yeah, gross garbage, smelly, stinky bags. And then you see something like this and you're like, oh no, how that's wrong, right? But maybe it's not wrong. Maybe they're just awesome and really dedicated to being strong as all hell.
I just found it fascinating that, like, I knew I had that experience at the WWE, like seeing these behemoth men in person and then still watching Pumping Iron. I was like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot. I mean, it's constant. It's and they zoom in on faces. A lot of stuff. They're back.
Oh my God, those close-ups were crazy. That one shot from under, like looking up at Arnold, and it was like an extreme close-up, and it was just like whatever they're called, traps or deltoids and a head. And it just was like, and his
And the veins. I wanted to ask you about the veins too, because some of these guys, you know, you see veins like throughout their entire body, their arm, they've like, why does that happen? So,
well, first of all, they have really low body fat.
Okay.
Relative to their, I mean, their total mass, they have a low body fat.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you lift, when you're lifting those kinds of weights repetitively, they are doing a certain amount of compression of the veins on and off. I don't know how that, I mean, that might account for some of the remodeling of those veins. They also have, you know, being athletes, they do, you volume expand a little bit. That's just natural when you exercise, you tend to volume expand. And so that combination of the regular compression of the veins and the regular increases in blood flow to those muscles that they're getting when they do exercise, combined with you know, the hydration and everything, there's going to be remodeling, I guess, of those veins.
Okay.
But the low body fat. They just have incredibly low body fat.
It's the same amount of health, you know, general health to see veins or not see veins. Because that was one thing that I thought was like, oh, maybe that's not good.
You're like, is that kind of danger?
Exactly.
Yeah, I felt that a lot. I was like, are these, the whole time I was like, these people have to hurt themselves so badly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't, like when they're just going like from here and then they're putting the bar up. Like, is anyone breaking their neck? Is anyone like what's happening? Their backs. Sorry,
I mean, he said he threw up.
I'm sure people get injured when they're lifting weights, but you know, this whole thing of injury at the muscle level, some of these signals that are driving hypertrophy, the building of muscle, is damaging muscle. That the damage of the muscle is a signal that the satellite cells use to start the process of building more contractile protein. Mm, so
it's kind of one and the same.
Muscle damage is going on, but they rebuild it and they recover.
That's what I was
going
to say. So do you have to have muscle damage to build?
Yeah.
You have to, also, it's like tearing. So the word damage is in kind of quotes. Yeah.
Tearing, right.
Gotcha.
And it can be at the molecular level. You get what they call, you know, these sort of tearing of the molecular motor that's going on inside it for the contractile proteins, all the way up to the membranes that are surrounding the muscle fibers and stuff can get torn, and that at a level that it, again, induces a signal for hypertrophy.
Wow.
What a fascinating thing to choose for oneself. But I guess that's anything. I think, you know, people look at stand-up comics and like, what universe would you choose to get up there in front of these people and try to make anyone laugh?
Right.
And I think the thing of, you know, it is hard. It takes a long time to build muscle, right? It's not overnight. Even if we were talking earlier about testosterone, I don't want to just make it seem like, oh, well, I made it easy. It doesn't make it easy. Even if you're taking testosterone or supplement, it takes a long time to build muscle. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they put in that work consistently for years.
Oh, years.
Yeah. It's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Well, that should be clear from all of us. Yeah. We're fans of what you guys are doing, bodybuilders.
Absolutely. I don't quite understand it, but I'm a fan that I get
it's the same kind of thing. He mentioned NASCAR in the movie.
Yeah.
And he was like, that seems crazy to me. These guys are going in these really fast loops. I don't know what the hell 100%. That is.
Right.
And I feel the same way. That seems nuts, but you know, they dedicate their lives to it. That's awesome. Right.
It's like people who have like a collection. Like spoons? What?
Stop collecting spoons.
Whatever they want. Like it's.
Yeah.
I think anything anyone's doing that's not hurting anyone else at this point in my life, I'm just like,
power to you.
Fabulous.
Absolutely.
I don't get it. But.
I have a few more things. We're running low on time, which is unbelievable to me. But I have so many different things to talk about. He smoked a joint, ate fried chicken and wine right after he won.
Right.
His competition.
Well, that was right after he retired.
Right after he, yeah.
It's like, bring that fried chicken on.
It's a really small, I just feel like that's kind of, that should be the staple. Like when you're done doing something, when you need a victorious meal, you got to do the Arnold. You got to do
fried chicken, wine, and a J.
Smoke a joint, fried chicken, and hell, okay.
I mean, right? What's better than that?
This is the message going out to all pro athletes out there.
Yes, pro athletes, honestly. Anything.
Yeah.
If you finish that script you've been trying to write for a year.
Small victories.
Hey, Fucking so staple it.
That should
it.
Be my thing when I retire from the university. Just get up on the yes. podium, smoke a joint.
Oh my God. Chicken. Keep a J in your mouth on the podium.
You'd be a legend.
Oh my
God. I mean, you're already a legend, Dr. James. But that would go down as like, you remember that guy who,
right in
when he
was. Herstory.
Right when he I wanted to talk about pre-workout stuff. Like, I see a lot of people at the gym doing cold brew. Doing yeah. like a coffee before the gym. Yeah. Is that, do you condone that? Is that like normal? Is it bad to do caffeine?
I won't pass a judgment on it, but caffeine was banned from the Olympics up until 2004.
What?
Yeah. Wait, up until 2004?
Up until 2004.
Like you couldn't, yeah. what, wait a minute. Because people like
caffeine,
coffee.
Because caffeine does enhance performance.
Okay.
So.
But now it's okay, you're saying?
I don't think it's banned from the Olympics right now. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was banned up until 2004.
That feels crazy to me because if, like, I'm...
Right. Super caffeinated drinks. So, I mean, not just the, you know, the cup of coffee from the...
Oh, that's the what I'm saying. Brewer.
No, but you drink a pretty high...
Yeah.
Some drink that has a high dose of caffeine in it, and you will enhance your...
Get an enhancement in your performance. I'll tell you what. I don't do it anymore, but there was a powder I used to take years ago that was one of these, like, it just looked like the standard pre-workout, whatever the hell, and it had a bunch of caffeine, and it would make me crazy. I would definitely go harder. I would, like, shake almost. I was, like, amped up. Like, I had to keep working out when I was done working out.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to be shaking.
Yeah, I was like, I got to just run upstairs. I don't know what to do.
And part of the thing with on weightlifting, I mean, we were talking about earlier, the volume of the workout, right? So more reps. More sets, you know, this all adds in there. And if that caffeine is making you feel you can keep doing that, you're going to get a little bit of an edge in terms of building muscle mass.
Gotcha.
Would they test your blood for caffeine? Like if you had a cup of coffee, would they be like, you're out. Sorry, Greg Louganis. My most recent.
Yeah, I don't know the test Olympic actually for caffeine. I mean, I'm sure it's getting metabolized too. So it might be some metabolite that comes out in your urine.
Wow, that's I cannot wait to Google that when we leave here because I just feel like
caffeine piss.
Well, also just like, I mean, everybody drinks coffee.
Right.
So like if you're a big coffee drinker,
you have
to not drink before.
I drink coffee. Yeah.
Okay.
I drink coffee.
You have to not drink before the Olympics. Like that. There's like withdrawals that go into
right.
it. Like I've tried to quit coffee and I drink a cup in the morning and I'm shaking by 2 p.m. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's hard to quit.
There are some sports drinks that have caffeine in them. You know,
so for sure.
I said like I cycle and there are these little packages you can get that have both carbohydrates in them and a little bit of caffeine in it. That will
and that's what you're addicted to.
Not addicted to.
No, well, Dr. Jimmy, no problem.
Well, but you keep doing it, so.
You're definitely
okay,
the problem.
Well, a small
Ethan
problem.
And I are here. Well, this is an intervention.
I have an email from your wife who the water is tip of the iceberg. So. okay, so.
By the way, most passive aggressive interventioners. So, if we move, it says, I don't know. It sounds like we're trying to help you, but like, honestly, quit. Like, yeah, right. So it's whatever.
Either way, I don't really care, but it's up to you.
I did write this letter.
I mean, I don't know. I'm trying not to.
The pump?
Get to. Yeah, I was going to talk about the pump. I have an audio clip of the pump. You want to play that for him?
The greatest feeling you can get in the gym, or the most satisfying feeling you can get in the gym, is the pump. Let's say you train your biceps. Blood is rushing into your muscles, and that's what we call the pump. Your muscles get a really tight feeling, like your skin is going to explode any minute. You know, it's really tight. It's like somebody blowing air into your muscle. It just blows up, and it feels different. It feels fantastic. It's as satisfying to me as coming is. You know, as having sex with a woman and coming. So can you believe how much I am in heaven? I'm like getting the feeling of coming in the gym. I'm getting the feeling of coming at home. I'm getting the feeling of coming backstage when I pump up, when I pose out in front of 5,000 people, I get the same feeling. So I'm coming day and night. I mean, it's terrific, right?
Wow. I mean, so much to break down there. Obviously,
I'm coming right now.
Listening to that.
Yeah.
The coming talk is obviously super strange. I hear what he's saying, of course. The music for me is what stands out as the weirdest.
Yeah, that was, I didn't remember that when I watched it the first time.
Oh my God, just like a flute. Just.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like the introductory scene of the villain in an old Disney movie. like your first meeting the villain, and we're
and they're like in a castle in the forest.
Yes,
because I was getting Dark Forest vibes.
Yeah,
but I wasn't putting it together with Disney villain. But that is what it is.
It just seems like because they always use like real, you know, symphonic bands and stuff to score that. So it just seems like why? What? Who? It's this weird cymbal and then a flute and oboe. It's really. It just makes it sound like what he's talking about is like overthrowing the government.
Yeah.
He's just talking about working out.
I did write that like that. There it was definite like cartoon movie villain vibes from everybody except Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, he seems like such a cute baby boy.
He was a baby. He was like one of the like bullies who doesn't know he's doing anything wrong, but his big brother is like, shut the fuck up, Lou, just do it.
Yeah,
knock over the mailbox with a baseball bat. And he's like, okay, I'll do it. Like, it was like that vibe.
That's true.
But everybody else was like, the Mike Waller guy who was wearing a weightlift, the redheaded dude.
Oh, right.
Who was wearing a weightlifting belt to play football.
Yeah, just out and about.
Just like, I'm not lifting weights right now, guys, but I can and I do.
Yeah. Does that help in every day? I thought maybe that like contracts his abs or something. Does that make sense?
No.
Just showing off.
Yeah, well, one of the things that might have been going on there is that the, what they call these sort of slow twitch muscles, your oxidative muscles, are hard to, a little bit harder to get them to atrophy or to hypertrophy.
Oh.
So maybe, and those tend to be your postural muscles.
Oh, that makes
sense. So maybe if you're wearing something with, I'm just postulating.
Yeah, sure.
Hypothesizing.
All right, so far so good.
Maybe this is what they're trying to do here, to get those postural muscles to work on those when you're not, in a way that will help them hypertrophy.
Is that like a woman wearing a corset when she... No, that's different. That's actually changing the shape of your bones. But it seems like it's doing a similar thing. Like he wants his waist to be thin and he's got this like little belt on just during his life.
I feel like it would remind me more than anything to like flex my abs and like stand up straight.
Maybe it's something like that. But
I don't know why. Okay, so wait, what about, what that sound means? We're going to talk about the pump.
What about that sound means I hit my pen into my mug.
So does that make sense what he's saying there?
Yeah, it does. I mean, he didn't provide any underlying physiology, but there is a really underlying physiological basis for that. When you're doing that exercise, contracting a muscle, you're driving up blood flow to the muscle. At the same time, you're increasing blood pressure within those vessels that are perfusing the muscle. And that increase in blood pressure tends to drive fluid out of the vasculature, out of the blood vessels, into the surrounding tissue, which is the muscle in this case.
Okay.
And so the muscles swell with this fluid, and then it goes away over time. So if you're working out at the gym, and you are, you'll get that pump. And most anybody that goes to the gym and works out with weights will start to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out feeling like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pumped up.
Pumped up right now.
Yeah.
And then it goes, by the time you get home, it's kind of gone.
So, right.
But it's like an endorphin.
That's what I was going to ask.
Like, I know, like, I don't pump at all, but I like do Pilates and I hike and I feel 1,000,000 times better.
Well, that's
even walking.
Yeah, well, aerobic exercise has its own kind of feeling that I think is probably different than the pump. Well, I think is different than the pump.
Right. Because it sounds like for cardio stuff, I feel like maybe afterwards or like towards the tail end, I start to feel a lot better mentally.
Yeah.
And that kind of stays with me for a while. But with weightlifting,
changes the chemistry of my whole day.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. For sure.
And there's a lot of evidence out there that it does do that.
But with weights, it sounds like it's, it's like the crack of this, physiological experience, right? Yeah. Like he's describing it like it's happening to me right now as I'm doing it.
Right, right.
So is there a correlation there with, I don't know, adrenaline or some sort of chemical?
It probably has to do a little bit with adrenaline. But, even when you do aerobic exercise, you get adrenaline, increase as well. There's just something, what he's describing is that feeling he gets from the effects of his muscles being expanded by fluid, volume distribution changes in the tissues, and he gets information. There's, there are receptors in your muscles that are sending information to your brain. So he's probably getting that feeling. Aerobic exercise does something a bit differently. And when you go out and you exercise, hiking, running, swimming, cycling, and you do that for 45 minutes or longer, you are really changing the way your brain is operating and functioning. And so there's a lot of evidence now that if you go out for aerobic exercise in the morning, you're better cognitively throughout the day.
Yep.
Yeah.
You just think better. Your brain functions better. So I always think of aerobic exercise as really having a huge benefit on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And lifting weights, I think, is important just to maintain some sort of strength and quality of life.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't think it has as, in fact, there's evidence out there it doesn't have as much impact on brain function.
Second tier. Yeah. What if you're doing the, you know, high intensity weight training where it's like you're moving from exercise to exercise, keeping your heart rate up for 45 minutes.
And that's still cardio.
Yeah. That's why I'm
still cardio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think the combination of cardio and weight training is the ideal.
That's the key.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in fact, people that there's a study on just weightlifting, people did just bodybuilding, just weightlifting without a lot of, you know, they always do some cardio, but
yeah,
primarily focused on weightlifting. And it just came out 2 years ago from the American Society of Urology at a meeting there. And it showed that bodybuilders had a 34% higher chance of death from cardiovascular issues. Whoa. Compared to the normal population. And that might be from this excessive pressures that are generated during heavy weightlifting.
Wow.
But I want to make sure that people understand weightlifting, just normal weightlifting.
Right.
Not
is very good for you.
Okay.
It's very good.
So it's just
you.
This.
Should lift weights.
I mean, that was what I was asking earlier. Like, this looks dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, we're learning now that football is causing dementia in
people's
40s and concussions. Like, obviously, again, not a doctor, but. Yeah. Yes, of course.
Right.
You think you're gonna you're not gonna scramble your eggs. You're shaking your brain for your entire life.
Right.
And with this, it's like there has to be that amount of pressure on like your
You know, your normal pressure is like 120 over 60.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This top pressure is called systolic. The bottom pressure is called diastolic. 120 over 60. There's a study a few years ago looking at bodybuilders, and they get pressures as high as 325 over 240.
Oh, gross. That's what it looks like.
During the actual lift, during the deadlift or during, you know, the.
Damn.
So those pressures, I would just assume that those kinds of pressures aren't good for you over the long term. But again, you know, a certain amount of weightlifting, 2 days a week, 3 days a week, everybody should be doing it, and particularly after 50 years of age, because I was talking earlier about sarcopenia.
Okay.
That's the loss of muscle mass with age. So once you start to age, you're losing muscle mass. So how do you change that? Just do a little bit of resistance training, everybody, men and women, and that will reduce their loss of muscle mass as they get older. And if you have more muscle mass as you get older, you have a better quality of life. You can walk around more. You can lift things. You can sit up and down from a chair easily. So it's a resistance training should be part of a regular exercise regime for everybody, and particularly for people as they get older.
What falls under the umbrella of resistance training? Like Pilates?
Anything where you are,
like what I'm
everything where you're contracting muscle against some load, right? Mm-hmm. So you can do that, you know, and you could resistance training. I can just do an isometric exercise, just this right now. And I'm putting tension on the muscle, because one of the factors that is driving, you know, the balance of muscle mass is tension, which includes the load on the muscle, and how many times you expose the muscle to that, and then how often you do that, right? So if you do isometric training, that's good.
Anything, weights, resistance bands, push-ups, pull-ups.
And always do concentric and eccentric contractions.
So
concentric is if I'm doing my biceps, I lift my arm up towards my body. That's concentric, and then I let it down, and you let it down slowly.
Oh, fascinating! So you're not just lifting up and then going down.
So you go to the gym, you see these people like lifting, and they drop the weight really quickly. You're like, it just drives you nuts.
Bunch of schmucks. Right?
Exactly. So
scientific
drives you nuts. So there's
a lot of evidence that concentric.
Yeah.
And eccentric contraction, shortening the muscle and then letting the muscle lengthen with tension slowly, induces a much greater hypertrophic response than just concentric alone.
And then you can get some hypertrophies.
Hypertrophies.
Oh, that's weird. There's an Ethan-shaped hole in the wall. He ran away and he's never coming back. The Kool-Aid man.
See ya. See you guys later.
Okay, great. We're over time now, but I mean, there was a couple other things.
It's fine. We can cut out all the stuff you said.
Yeah, that's probably what I'll do. Just have you guys have the whole thing. I just wanted to say, I was curious if this was like Schwarzenegger's breakout role, if people had known about Schwarzenegger before. And so there was two roles that he had before this one. I don't know if you guys know about this. He was in a movie called The Long Goodbye as a deaf mute mob hitman in 73.
Wow.
Which I have not seen. And then there was a more significant part he played in Stay Hungry in 76, which is technically after this filmed, which was in 75, where the trailer, it's a movie with, now I'm forgetting this guy's name. What's the guy's name? Big Lebowski and Jeff Bridges. So there's a very young Jeff Bridges, 1976 Jeff Bridges in Stay Hungry, Sally Fields. And this movie looks crazy. I have not seen it, but the trailer looks insane. And Schwarzenegger's in it. And it seems like a pretty decent amount. So and he won the Golden Globe Award for New Star of the Year. Actor.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I think everybody should probably check out Stay Hungry.
And so you're telling me they made this doc in 75. It took 2 years to edit this masterpiece?
There was some sort of post-production hell that this doc went through. I don't know exactly what happened. I know that it was like
almost
about...
Almost didn't come out.
It was, yeah, it was about somebody else that was like working out at Gold's Gym in Venice. And then like somehow he was like training Schwarzenegger or like training at the same time or something. And then this they had some problems with him. And then it just became, let's follow Schwarzenegger. And then Schwarzenegger took over and he was like, I will... help you make this movie happen. And so I think that's why. And I'm also I've heard some things on the internet about how he said some of this more controversial stuff on purpose so that the movie would do better.
And again, now that we know about his mental, not manipulation, but the way that he's psychologically working people.
Yes,
that
it makes sense. It does make sense. Yeah. But then again, it's like, maybe some of this is based in reality. Like I read people said there's a weird line in the movie where he talks about his dad's funeral.
Oh, and then he says, was just like, didn't go back, didn't care, forgot about it.
Right. Yeah. I'm focused on my training. It was 2 months before an event. And so there was, he claimed after the movie came out that he actually did go to his dad's funeral and that this was just something he wanted to spice up. He wanted to be the villain of the movie. You know, he wanted to be the champion that's out for blood. But then there was also reports that he didn't go.
Right.
And so I didn't know what was true. If you guys know, let me know, send an email. But anyway, so just some little facts there. I'll let you guys know in the future if I ever watch this movie, Stay Hungry, which seems to be really, really weird. Bugs? Jackie, got something you wanted to tell the good people about?
The good people. Yeah, watch Glow Season 3, August 9th on Netflix. Follow me on Instagram at Jackie Tone, J-A-C-K-I-E-T-O-H-N. Stay tuned for my Amazon cartoon in 2020.
Oh, yeah. Very excited about that.
Oh, goody. It's Little Bird Singing.
It's Little Bird Singing. You can't get enough. Dr. James Hicks. What's up?
I had a paper in PLOS One Biology 2 weeks ago, but of course nobody's going to read that. But it doesn't matter. Putting a plug out there. So I'm putting the plug out there.
Of course it matters.
Out there.
All right.
So. What's that called?
PLOS One.
Oh, biology? PLOS One.
PLOS One. That's the name of the journal. PLOS One Biology.
Got it.
So PLOS One Biology. A couple weeks ago.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Can't wait to read it.
Okay.
I'll let you know what I think of it.
All right.
Yep. That's it. People. What about classes? Are you teaching some classes?
Quarters ending, finals week this week.
Okay, big week.
That's why I'm up here.
Ignoring work.
And then the summer break.
Great. Okay. Well, I hope you have a good summer.
Thank you.
I hope to see you soon. I hope to see you both soon.
Hooray!
I had a great time and see you next time.
That was quick. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our social media producers are Kate Baker and EJ Gullett, and the executive Pompducer is Brett Kushner. A special thanks to Lucas Bollinger for engineering this session and editing the episode with me. You can follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That is at Bad Science Show for behind the scenes pics and to see what films are coming next and such and such and such. Send us an email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. Let us know what films you'd like to hear about next. And if you're really feeling super kind, if you're in a great mood today, you can leave us an iTunes review. That lets other people hear about the show, which I really appreciate. Okay, we will see you next week where we will be talking about Waterworld. Bye-bye.